Thanks for listening to the Replatform podcast, sponsored by Attraction Hypersonics, hosted by me, James Gerd, and Paul Rogers. A warm welcome if it's your first episode. We put a lot of time and effort into bringing amazing guests and great content to you for free, so help us keep it that way. Refer us to other people, let them know we exist, share our posts on LinkedIn and Twitter, and the best thing you can do is give us a rating on Apple, Spotify, YouTube, or wherever you're listening or watching. So thanks, we hope you enjoy this episode. So this is the concluding episode of our Amazing Women in E-commerce series. Aoi was launched by Yotpo in 2018 to celebrate how women are leading and shaping the e-commerce industry. Today, we are talking to the wonderful e-commerce team, Astrid Amir, a contemporary jewellery brand whose positioning is, quite interestingly, more than a jewellery brand. We are a movement on a mission to revolutionise the jewellery experience, which sounds very intriguing. So let's find out a bit more. And our topic is, it's basically a fireside chat on Shopify, POS, multi-store, loyalty, etc. with e-commerce leaders in the business. So let's do the introduction. So first we have Molly Allen, who's the Senior Econ Manager. Hey, Molly, how you doing?
Hey, I'm good, thank you. How are you?
Yeah, I'm good. We've worked together before and I've wanted to get you on the podcast, so I'm very, very excited. So we're going to ask you loads of questions. So let's first to give people a flavour for what your role is.
Yeah, absolutely. So I have been with Astrid for kind of just coming up to 6 months. So I look after the trading, the development roadmap, also kind of overseeing the day-to-day with our lovely junior called Susie as well. So it's quite a broad, we're a very small team. It's quite a lot of bits that we get to put our toes into. But no, it's very exciting to be at Astrid and meet you.
Cool, thank you. And we have Rachel Powell-Jones, who's the head of e-commerce. Hey, Rachel, how are you?
I'm good, thank you, James. Thanks for having me on the podcast. It's very, very exciting. yeah, just a quick intro on me. So I've been with the company for just over a year now. So all in all, our e-com is not only small, but quite young. I was brought on at the early part of last year to essentially lead the e-com team and pretty much build it from the ground up. But so much has changed and so much growth as well. So it's been a really exciting journey. So yeah, really happy to be here and talk a little bit more about it.
Fantastic. Yeah, really looking forward to it. It's a cool brand. And also I quite like it when you've got a young team in terms of time at that a business that can then grow into the strategy together. I think it's quite nice. So Molly, I just want to start with you because first of all, massive congratulations on being named a 2023 Aoi honoree. That's amazing. I'd love to know, like, for you personally, what does being part of the community mean and what are the benefits it brings?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's amazing to be a part of a community of like-minded women who are all about empowering women, right? So, you know, their values actually, interestingly, very much aligned to Astrid and Miu in terms of it's all about growing and learning together, really empowering people to make like educated decisions and so on. And I think it's funny, yeah, because at Astrid and Miu, two of our three values is about growing together, so sharing information, supporting one another, but also celebrating one another. And I think that's what Amazing Women in E-commerce really represent. So yeah, they do a lot of great things for people within the industry, but also just, you know, girls growing up, they've got a lot of good charities which they support. So yeah, it's very, very honoured to be given that award.
Yeah, I love that thing as well, that they're not just connecting, you know, like-minded people and really smart people in the industry, but they're actually positively contributing through the charity stuff. I love that. With a daughter who I'm encouraging to support like charities that do positive things in that space as well, I think it's fantastic that these networks are growing. And now let's go into your personal journey before we start getting into the Astrid e-commerce story. Do you want to give people a bit of flavour for your e-commerce background and then what brought you to your current role?
Yeah, absolutely. So I've been in e-com now, I'm trying to think of the time, it's about 7 years or so. I kind of started, my career trajectory has been quite a simple one in terms of I went to uni, studied business management, focused in digital, did a placement year in e-com, and then kind of just gone within e-com brands in different verticals. So I've worked in high street retailers for clothing, I've worked in luxury homeware, and obviously now I've moved into jewellery, which is very exciting. From a personal perspective, I tend to just look for anywhere, which is kind of a bit of a challenge, which is why Astrid and Miu was very appealing. We're scaling up quite considerably. And one of our other values is all about breaking boundaries and taking risks. And I think that's quite rare to find a brand which is very willing to actually try new things out and test things out. I feel like when you tend to go to a lot of brands, people like to think that's the case, but actually it's not really embedded in the culture and therefore it's quite hard to get things pushed through. Whereas at Ashton & Miu, you know, it really is part of our core culture is testing and trying and breaking boundaries. So yeah, that's definitely one of the biggest things which drove me to A&M and seeing all of the exciting activations which are going to kind of already happening and then continuing to happen in the next few years.
Great. And then Rachel, so first question for you. So Astrid is a very multi-channel focused business and you have quite a few stores, obviously grown the store network quite a lot over the last couple of years. And there's lots of different kind of services and things you offer. How do you manage that side of things from a tech perspective?
Yeah, no, absolutely. So first and foremost, we are really ingrained in the Shopify ecosystem. We use Shopify for our POS and our online channels as well. So when the company started like 11 years ago, obviously it was only really a one online store. And we were looking at rolling out stores like a handful at a time. And I would say like for a smaller amount of POS stores and like a few online stores, Shopify is really robust for that. Straight out the box, it can just essentially do the job that you need to do, especially because even now we don't really have an in-house tech team. So having something that's really user-friendly out of the box is kind of perfect for us. In saying that, I think you probably already mentioned we're scaling so quickly. We are launching stores or deploying active stores like it's going out of fashion. So it is becoming, I wouldn't say it's becoming an issue, but it is becoming something that we're talking about internally in terms of the pace that we're scaling against our current technical stack. It's doing the job that it needs to. Like, again, it is very straightforward. It's very transactional. And there are certain things that are being introduced, which services what we're doing well. Like a good example is that because Shopify is obviously US owned, a lot of the newer features go out to the US first. We had POS Go launched in our US store in New York. And that's really neat because it kind of services that till this experience, which goes hand in hand with what we currently have in store. We want to give people an experience in store, and having staff on the shop floor servicing customers rather than being behind the till is really neat. But yeah, like there's a lot of other things that I'm sure we'll explore down this podcast, which will essentially, I guess, highlight some certain limitations that we're having. So yeah.
Attract, your complete product discovery growth engine. Create relevant shopping experiences that convert into sales and grow online revenue with personalized search, merchandising, and recommendation solutions powered by AI. Find out more at attract.com.
Yeah, linked to that, because I've looked at Shopify POS, and I won't know it in as much depth as you do because you're using it actively in the business, but I've looked at it for a few smaller clients, and there's a lot of benefits with, obviously, the integration because it's linked into the payment thing, and they have the unified accounts and baskets, etc. But it does fall short on some of the areas that retailers want to expand into around, like, clienteling, for example, and you know, more enrichment of capturing of customer data. I'd love to know, like, are you using it alongside anything else? Are you doing clienteling, or is this like future for Astrid?
I definitely say that we're like at the early stages of even like profiling our customers. Like, as I said, we've scaled so quickly, and the customer acquisition we're getting from those stores is you know, it's something that we're definitely seeing as an opportunity. And I'd only say in the last maybe like 6 to 8 months, we've really focused on honing in on that. And as you say, like with the clienteling side, it's definitely a limitation that we have on the POS system. And an example that I'll give is like, even on the CRM side, our opt-in for in-store is quite low. And we decided this year that we would essentially soft opt-in customers. And online on the Shopify platform, you could do that quite easily. It's essentially a tick box, and then you're soft opting a customer, and they can uncheck it at the checkout funnel. But on the POS terminal, you can't do that. So it's a manual element for the store staff to pre-tick it and then, you know, show the customer and check they're happy with it and everything. But aside from that, actually getting some really good kind of tangible customer data is quite difficult. So in answer to your question, it's definitely something that we'll be looking at as a very near future, is what do we do with all those customers that are coming in and the data that we're not potentially capturing and utilizing. So yeah, it's definitely not something we're currently have access to.
Yeah, it's interesting because I know another jewelry brand, but they're a boutique jewelers. They're not like a huge mass market, loads of stores. But they looked at the likes of Merco, but Merco's fantastic, but it's very expensive in comparison. But the bit they struggle with, and I'd be keen to hear whether you do these services in store, which is, you know, people bought a ring, but they need it resizing. And they need these little alterations, which is always unique to the jewelry space that other verticals don't have to worry about. How do you handle things like that? Can people come into store and I'm assuming they can request those services? Like, you know, what tech do you use to handle things like, you know, alterations and getting those done?
Yeah, sure. So currently we don't offer that kind of level of jewelry alteration. Our bespoke services in the extent goes towards things like engraving our jewelry, and also we have like set services that we have a booking system online, or you can go into store, which can then document that customer data, i.e. they're going to get a welded bracelet, they want a custom charm on there, or they want a tattoo. So we have certain platforms that hold the data. So we use a booking system called GAT, and there is customer data there, and we've built an integration to our ESP so we can flow through that customer data and get like a wider view. But yeah, like on ad hoc basis, usually we're I suppose not really capturing per se, like on an automated way, it is still quite manual. And to your point about kind of making those really big decisions, I think we're there at the minute. We're trying to like get a really good balance of saying, like, do we hold out and say, okay, Shopify POS will eventually get to a point where, you know, they'll have clienteling and they'll have better ways to capture customer data that we can tangibly use? Or do we start migrating now, future-proofing ourselves, making that investment early on so we're not falling down where we have 30 stores and like 6 online, you know, instances or whatever? So yeah, it's a really, really difficult question to answer. It's definitely is a business-wide decision. So yeah, it is a fine balance. And also it's like, we're so used to using Shopify, like the whole business is, and it's adapting and changing. And that's also something to consider, is like internally, you need to train people and you need to get people on board, and there's an integration period, all these things. And obviously there's pain points after that. So it's like, at what stage do we do it? Do we look into it and consider it before it's too late, essentially? And we've completely outgrown all of our systems and tech. So
I think the other thing, like knowing a bit obviously about Astrid and me from working together, I think you obviously utilize things like, you know, you do multi-channel loyalty, you've obviously got the single customer view, and you probably benefit from having that kind of, yeah, combined view of everything and, like, you know, gift cards and whatever else. And I guess if you, knowing a bit about the back office side, if you were to go down the route of stripping out Shopify POS, you've then got quite a lot of work to do to replicate a lot of that functionality.
Yeah, exactly. So it is essentially replicating what we already have, and then looking for those like other opportunities that we can utilize. But with that as well, where there's more functionality you can use, there's obviously more manpower and training to be training them to be able to use it and then get the data out as well. So that's another interesting thing, I think, from a company perspective, where we start to find is like, we have this data, but actually interpreting this data is another skill set altogether, like getting your staff on board to be able to use the data, analyze it, and, you know, interpret it in a way that you can use it in your roadmap and your next steps, etc. Because we are still scaling, I'd say it's something that we're continually reviewing all the time.
I think it's a really good point of caution to give other people as well is no technology is perfect. We all know it. And there's always pros and cons to change. And you're right. I mean, you've got a pro that's that whole unified account thing from a customer experience and the like marketing automation. You can't underestimate the benefit of that and having to unpick that and then plan other flows. Yeah, interesting to hear that. Molly, we previously worked together at the homewares brand you're talking about, and you were using Magento before. With all the joys and woes that come with Magento, limitations, flexibility, endless customizations. I'd love to know how you personally, in your e-commerce capacity, found switching into working with Shopify, having a proven like SaaS system from a day-to-day perspective. What are you seeing? What have you loved about it? And what are some of the things you go, oh, I can't do that. I need to find a different way.
Yeah, I mean, to be honest, it has been a very nice shift going from Magento to Shopify. With Magento, obviously, there was a lot of restrictions, which Shopify does not have. So with Shopify, what I found using it is we have so much more control and flexibility from a day-to-day perspective. So whereas with Magento, we were so reliant on our external agency, we were reliant on just simple changes that were hard-coded. So if we just wanted to change a line of copy, we'd have to reach out to development. You know, for page templates, because with Magento, we were not headless. So the CMS was the basic out-of-the-box functionality, which just didn't really work for us. Whereas with Shopify, their customizer, you know, allows us to have much greater control in-house, which we can then adapt and really act quite fast-paced, which is perfect for us because we move so quickly. You know, we're scaling, like we mentioned. So yeah, the control and flexibility from a content perspective has been such a change that you wouldn't be able to get with Magento unless you really went headless. The other aspect as well, which has been a huge time but also cost saver, is the app ecosystem. So now we have the kind of control in-house to install new apps. You know, even if it's just a case of testing, we can get a new app up and running within a couple of hours, whereas with Magento it would have been a whole project in itself just to get one app running. So it would be a, you know, a huge cost from a development point of view, resource, the time. So yeah, the control and flexibility on that side has been brilliant. And then also, because obviously it's a SaaS, the other huge improvements I've seen from Shopify compared to Magento is the service itself. So obviously with Shopify, we have the support and it's all managed as well in terms of the bugs. So with Magento, we had little to no support, to be honest. So the amount of bugs that we were dealing with on a daily basis and the amount of retainer hours with our development agency, which was spent fixing issues rather than developing, has been a big change. Now, with all of the hours that we have with our current amazing agency, BAO, what's for the name then? Yeah, we can now use those hours to actually develop and improve the site rather than just fixing existing functionality, which wasn't really working for us in the first place. So that's been brilliant. And then also just the day-to-day Shopify support. So obviously I'm quite fresh to Shopify. I've used it in the past, but that was quite a long time ago. And obviously we're now on 2.0. So the kind of 24-hour support as well that we're getting from Shopify vastly differs to what we had in with Magento, which was next to nothing. The biggest weakness, though, for me with Shopify is, it's, I think, what everyone else experiences, is the multi storefronts. So obviously, with Magento, you could have multiple storefronts, but they were in one Magento instance. So it meant that managing content was vastly easy. You could easily just duplicate it onto another storefront. Whereas with Shopify, it's a case of almost, you know, duplicating the amount of work we're doing each time. So. You know, it puts a lot of pressure on a small team which doesn't have tons of resource to manage everything which is going on within the business.
Hypersonix helps e-commerce companies make more profit every day. This AI-driven platform delivers recommendations for pricing and inventory that lead to bigger profits. Visit hypersonix.ai/podcast to get a free trial.
Well, great. That kind of segues nicely into my next question. And I'll ask you first, Rachel, and obviously Molly, feel free to add to this. But as part of kind of Astrid's growth, you've obviously gone into additional markets. You mentioned the US, and then you kind of fulfill globally as well. Can you just talk us through how the Shopify side is set up and kind of how you're managing that side of things.
Yeah, sure. So currently we've got three Shopify instances. So one of them is .com. That's like our main online store. And I'd say like 95, maybe 97% is all UK customers. It's mainly our UK market. But we do run Shopify markets in the background, so international customers can still purchase. And then our other two instances, so one is the US, like you said, and the other one is the EU. I'd say those two storefronts are still relatively small. And Molly's right, you know, in terms of separate storefronts, regardless of whether you have three or whether you have six, it's still a pain in terms of updating data and, you know, trying to sync various aspects of it. It's a limitation from our front. However, in saying that, because they're smaller markets for us, we do tend to see it more so as an awareness piece and to hold retention. So we are looking at expanding in these said markets and building upon that awareness. So in terms of marketing, that's where we kind of sit, where we're there to support those markets online, and the growth will come from that. So the tech that we have, so on the EU, for example, we're not localized. We don't have anything running in the background automated to translate. But that's not to say in the future we won't go down that route or to just go ahead and hard translate it ourselves. But yeah, from our side, it is our main focus really is on the UK market and .com for now.
Great. And you recently did you mentioned BAU and you mentioned 2.0. So you recently did a theme rebuild and kind of full redesign. Can you talk us through like some of the goals with that and some of the things that you were able to kind of fit into the scope to maximize the benefit of the project?
Yeah, absolutely. How long do you have? A big part of obviously me joining the company is just reviewing the whole online user journey. There was a really big focus of making sure that we were future-proofing ourselves from that front, because we know we had a really like extensive roadmap and strategy of focusing on retail, and the aesthetic really need to look as premium and on brand as our stores. And before I joined, I did like a full site audit of the current site pre 2.0. And when I started, it's a little bit like the analogy I want to use is going into someone's house and knowing you want to just do a complete renovation and you want to knock down some walls, you want to buy new furniture. And that's kind of like how I felt. And I knew the e-com team would be small and it would be me building it. And from a company standpoint, a lot of people were on board with it. So I was already in the midst of a 2.0 project in my prior company before joining. So I knew about the sections everywhere. And I knew in terms of manpower, it would be great to have those sections. And I think Molly touched upon it, being able to be that agile in terms of the format of the site and content was definitely advantageous for us. So I think BAO built us 21 sections. It got really out of hand, but we just were so excited with the capabilities of being able to manage our content, because the Astrid and Miu content is actually very, very good. It's probably one of the highest standards that I've seen, and we churn out content very quickly. We've got a really, really talented and strong content and creative team. So we were looking for sections everywhere to not only, you know, make it as premium and aesthetic, but to host that content. And then on top of that as well, there were loads of bespoke elements, which I wanted to onboard to kind of really utilize that omni-channel feature. Things like store locators, check availability in-store, even down to some of the kind of trading functionalities like gift with purchase. So it's making sure that you had a really good list. I mean, we essentially squeezed a 12-month roadmap together with the 2.0. So it was not only a facelift, but it was functionality as well. And looking how we could basically service as much as possible within that project. SKU level packaging, that was a really interesting mapping exercise for BAO. It's like, being able to identify within your basket what has specific gift packaging or bespoke elements and what doesn't, in one order. And then like the final big one, I think, that we really wanted to focus on was loyalty. So our current site now, pretty much the whole purchasing funnel from the time when you log in your account to when you go to PDP, there is mention of our loyalty program. And it's definitely helped us in terms of like our retention plans. I think since we launched, up until now, we've seen a 51% increase in our loyalty signups. Revenue via loyalty was up like another 72%. There was a lot that could be elevated in that journey. And I think we really nailed it in the redesign. But interestingly, one thing actually you said to me, Paul, I don't know if you remember this, like right at the beginning, when I was telling you I was doing a 2.0 project, you said, Rach, make sure you get that statement of works, like, bang on. And like, I kind of listened to you at the time and I was like, yeah, you know, what can... But actually that rings so true as a learning. Like we were knee deep in the project and things just kept being added, because from my side, I guess one thing that I failed to, come to terms with is that you're still trading in the background. And whenever you launch, and we launched October last year, so October 2022, we were just hitting our peak period and we were launching our advent, and our advent PDPs were also, there's bespoke elements on there. And it was just something we just didn't completely consider. Get your statement of works right. I think that was a really good advice that clearly I didn't quite listen to at the time. But it worked out for the best for us. I think moving to 2.0 was really beneficial for our growth that we've seen.
Yeah, it pays sometimes to be dull and focus on things like statements of work and documentation. That's basically my life. I'm exceptionally dull in e-commerce. Paul does the fun stuff. I'd love to continue on that theme with you, Molly, on the loyalty. So the loyalty program is quite new. It sounds really interesting, like, and impactful. Love to know, what is loyalty? Like, what features? Because there's been definitely a shift, I think, in the way e-commerce teams have looked at loyalty and focused on value, not just discounts and points. So love to hear, like, you know, what does loyalty mean for you? Like, how do you reward customers? And are there, like, you know, new things coming down the line?
Yeah. So loyalty for us... you know, obviously there is the benefits of the discounts and the early access or whatever, but it's all about having a community. So we have a really strong returning customer base, and for us it's to build that community and also drive from an omni-channel perspective. So not just driving people online, but also driving them in store. So our lovely CRM team, they're introducing new loyalty changes, new rewards for customers that aren't just discount led, but are benefits from their side. So in terms of let's say like a free gift with their birthday, for example. But then also we're thinking from a digital perspective of what can we do to actually elevate their experience online. So what are the pain points that they're currently experiencing that we need to improve for on site? So yes, they'll get the benefits in terms of the rewards, etc. But actually, if you're logged into an account, you know, what does that mean for that user? What benefits can they get? Whether it be, you know, all of their account information in one place, they have, you know, all of their previous orders in one place. But one of the biggest things I think is coming up for us in a point of conversation is that element of having a lot of customers go in store for services who then become quite loyal customers for us. And it's how do we then resonate with that customer and make sure that they continue to have a really positive experience online and are, notified about new products, new launches, but then also new events. So having in-store events, advent calendars for us is a huge thing. So again, it's just considering those customers as, you know, our key customers that we want to keep happy. We want to keep them at our forefront of, like, you know, all of our new launches and new innovations. In terms of what's going to be happening long term and what plans we've got, so from kind of touching on what Rachel just mentioned about the improvements that we've made on site already. So the focus for me this year was really, okay, so we've got the really strong foundations, we're touching, you know, all of the different points of the funnel, but actually what are the elements which are missing? So really having that test and learn approach, essentially. So analyzing the user behavior, looking at the Vivon census report, so our post checkout survey, understanding the pain points for customers, you know, what were they finding difficult, And for me, the kind of key areas which came out of this is the educational point, and then also the transparency of you know, you've got reward, how easy is it to access? I think what's difficult at the minute is loyalty is becoming a big thing for a lot of brands. But it's difficult for consumers to really resonate with what does a point mean for them. It means so many different things in different companies. It's quite hard for a customer to really understand actually the benefit that they will get from, you know, the point system. So for us, what we've done is personalize the content if you're logged into an account. So everything you'll see is personalized based on your account. So if you're on a product page, it will show you how many points you are away from getting a reward based on your specific account. And if you've got a reward already, like, let's shout about it. Let's show that customer that they've got a reward and they should use it. And we're working very closely with the CRM team. So they're also, you know, undertaking very similar changes. So from an email perspective, again, it's all personalized. If you're logged into an account, you'll see whether you've got a reward, whether you've points. So it's really making it seamless from every touch point for a customer. And again, it's that omnichannel question, which is the biggest question for us. And how do we improve that going forward? Because we know that, you know, that's some of Shopify's limitations again in terms of the multi storefronts experience. You know, we're growing exponentially. So, you know, there's a lot of customers who will go on holiday and potentially shop in one of our stores abroad. It's making sure that, you know, the points can be carried over, etc. So I think there's definitely getting to a point, as Rachel's already mentioned, with a lot of our tech stack, is this right for us long term? Do we need to think bespoke? You know, what can we do to make sure that we continually provide the best experience for our loyal customers who mean so much to us as a brand?
Yeah, and you so you touched on the tech stack, and from what I've understood, you've got a relatively lean tech stack, right? I'd love to know if you've got any plans. We talked about, like, tactical things around loyalty, you've done your redesign. Have you got any plans to introduce any major new systems to, like, improve operational efficiency or to help you with scalability, you know, PIM, DAM, whatever it might be that you might have used in other businesses? I'd love to know, is anything big coming down? Is it more focusing on using the Shopify ecosystem?
Yeah. So we're actually in the midst now of onboarding our first IMS. So we're onboarding a system called Syn7. Prior to that, we were really solely relying on Shopify and using a tool called Stocky, and very quickly again started to show signs of growing pain. So Syn7 really will be our first soiree into eventually having like a fully fledged ERP system. We're probably not quite there yet, so we haven't made that big leap, but for now we're calling this kind of like an ERP light and just gearing the business up where we've talked about, you know, adapting and change and how that flows through the business. This is something where we're currently doing. So it will work similarly to an ERP. So all our online orders, our POS orders, wholesale, etc., all will run through Syn7 and then to the warehouse. And I think ultimately it's definitely a step in the right direction. And there's a lot of things that Syn7 can do, which is definitely needed from an inventory standpoint and a PO standpoint. It's just now untangling a lot of those mappings that we had with our warehouse. Again, it comes down to those bespoke elements and making sure it's able to flow through through a new system. But I mean, overall, we've been so heavily reliant on Shopify that it is coming with some pain. But eventually, I think, as I say, like it will be like a long-term investment, and yeah, we'll definitely see the benefits rolling into it coming into Q4. So yeah, a lot of change here, but I think that's probably one of our biggest like system onboarding. And as I said, because we don't have a technical team in-house, like, or IT team, this is something that's going to be, yeah, like quite useful for the wider business overall, I think.
Great. And then Molly, so can you just talk us through, you've already mentioned quite a few to be fair, but of the kind of bigger Shopify third parties and apps that you use, which ones have impressed you most and what do you use them for?
So there's quite a few big ones. So in terms of the day-to-day, one of the biggest things for me is, you know, the product aspect, the data aspect, which is Matrixify, which, you know, it's not the most exciting app, but it's something which we're using very regularly and helps us from a product management point of view. So obviously the custom fields which Shopify have launched with 2.0 is great, but our products are very, you know, and all of our content, like a lot of businesses, we have a lot of niche information that you know, isn't really working with the basic data which Shopify has. So yeah, using that and Accenturate as well for the custom fields. So a lot of our data is pulling from Accenturate. So all of these custom fields from stacking sets, like cross-selling function to what other bits have we got? Engraving, the advent calendars, like Rachel was mentioning, where we've got a lot of customizable features there. That's definitely a big one. I'm trying to think off the top of my head, which are the apps we use. Shopify Flow as well. You might have to cut out some bits here, but Shopify Flow as well, that's a big one, which is very different to Magento in terms of, us being able to set up a lot of automatizations, which we wouldn't have previously had with Magento. That's something which we're not currently using to its best potential, and something which I want to look into and see what we can do to improve. Because obviously, like I say, we've got short resource with all of our assets as well, and imagery, we have to make sure they come down at a certain time because of the regulations there. So we have to just keep on top of that. In terms of apps as well, so we're looking at implementing a new merchandising tool, which will be quite a big change for us. So we're currently using quite a basic feature, to be honest, but we're launching a new app which will really help with data. So again, kind of going on the points of making sure that we start making data-driven decisions rather than being quite subjective. So we've got a lot of really good foundations in place now, but it's making sure that we're analysing the user behaviour and really understanding what the benefits we can do and really driving sales across the business. So we're looking at a new merchandising tool, which will hopefully be implemented in the next couple of weeks, which we can then start making, a lot of changes to the rules of our merchandising, improving from a, user experience, cross-selling, and really driving the UPT of our products.
Great. And then I guess last question. So maybe if you start, Rachel, and again, Molly, feel free to add to it. But we've talked about loads of different things, from multi-channel to kind of some of the things you've done via the 2.0 kind of upgrade. What's next on your roadmap? So what else are you looking to kind of roll out from a kind of Shopify and front-end perspective?
I think a real biggie for us, definitely on the online side and possibly for the omni-channel side. I feel like it's such a fashionable word nowadays. It's such a resurgence, but for our business, we are that. We are so multi-channel, and we are considering definitely something that could service hosting our online and our retail customers. So we know that a lot of our retail customers are our service customers, we call them. So they come in for a tattoo or a welded bracelet, but they'll also buy product. How do we capture those customers? Because they're the ones really with the very basic data that we currently have. We can see high level that there are highest value customers, and we can see their LTV very easily. So it's that as a strategy as a whole that we want to grow. There are talks of app. So we are thinking that if we could have an app which will be able to combine those elements, like a customer booking a service online in the app, and then obviously you've got your storefront there, then you've got the whole push notifications as we are growing regionally in the UK, but also overseas as well. Having those notifications and that geolocation will really service that element. We are definitely the demographic of customer that is mobile first. I think our current mix is 86% is mobile. So again, that kind of services the app element of it, but we're at super early stages of discovery. The way that we as a department essentially function is making sure that whatever tech or whatever big, large project like this will be, we introduce is relevant for us. There's lots of talk around, like AI and augmented reality, like overlaying jewelry. But the honest truth of it is that we want to make sure that if we do something like that, it looks really good and the technology really services our needs. We wouldn't do it just for the sake of being that one jewelry retailer who, you know, I know there's a few out there that already do it, but like that do it really, really well. Especially as our largest mix category wise is earrings. Like how do you overlay earrings on the side of your head to see it with your eyes? There's all these challenges, and you know, we get thrown that a lot to us in terms of suggestions, and you know, they're great suggestions and there's definitely a market for it, but we just got to make sure that on our roadmap it's relevant for us. But yeah, I don't know if you've got anything more to add to that, Molly, but app is definitely certainly, you know, something we're quite interested in.
Yeah, and app's definitely up there. And a personal challenge, which I'd love to get on board with. But the other thing as well, which we're doing, which is exciting and kind of the first time which we've experimented with it in-house, is implementing a experimentation tool. So again, going back to like the data-driven decisions, we've got the really solid foundations now. Yes, the site is performing really well, but it's making sure that we're really listening to our customers and testing and implementing changes which really work with our customers and not necessarily what we are subjectively thinking or have seen works well with another brand doesn't necessarily mean that it works well for Ashton & Miu. So yeah, everything which we're kind of looking at, it's all about now testing it and seeing what you know drives the greater conversion, whatever the metric may be that we're looking at.
So yeah, I'm going to do a devil's advocate just because I like to be provocative on this, because I take your point totally, Rachel, about jewelry and like AR, and I've seen it done reasonably well and really poorly, where you just have like a looks like a mannequin's hand with a visually rendered 3D ring, and it looks crap. Which from a mass market it can work, but for a premium brand or a boutique brand, it's not really what you're trying to do. But take the experimentation approach, which true experimentation is learn fast, fail fast, iteratively, you know, put it out to a very small number of people, test, validate. Would you ever go down the route of testing something that's 60% what you want, but not really the beautiful brand experience to a small subset? Would that ever be, or would that, is it more about, you know what, the brand experience is so, so important, we wouldn't ever want to compromise that?
Yeah, no, that's a fantastic question. I think, yeah, there's definitely a halfway point of that. I probably wouldn't say 60. I'm closer to the 70%, 80% mark. But, I think like, you know, one thing I'd say would be a good one for us is we're so known for like stacking jewelry. You know, so similar to what I have now, like, you know, a necklace on top of a necklace and like building a whole look. I think that's probably more relevant for us in terms of the commerciality aspect of it, obviously increasing your UPT, but bringing in that brand experience. That's the space we probably look at experimentation and doing it well. I think like our budgets are still of a scaling company. So again, there's experimentation, but you've got to balance it with your ROI and the relevancy and the brand experience. There's quite a few pillars for us. If we were your larger big retailers and they gave me, you know, a very nice kind of budget, then fair enough. There is that kind of slightly less risk of it. If it fails, it's fine. But for us, it's still has to be very considered and worth its time. So yeah, I think the stacking element is an interesting one for us and probably something we'll explore down the line. But yeah, not 60%.
This, I'll get you to 65, job done. Yeah, no, it's interesting. The stacking one, this is what always worries me when I talk to exciting brands, because my wife's like, oh, it was on the podcast, and she loves stackable stuff for jewellery. And so I know now that she's going to look at this latest episode and she's going to be straight on the site. So I'll hold you personally responsible for mentioning the word stack.
Yeah, exactly. I think, just to add to that as well, I think a really good one to experiment on as well is to look at our male audiences and how those specific customers are journeying through our site, what they're looking at, how to get them from going straight to a gift card, you know, like you mentioned about your wife. And, you know, we hear the story all the time from our male customers or anybody, you know, our friends, family members who are male who have partners. Oh, I love Ashton & Miu. we're so highly giftable, you know, that is our bread and butter majority of the time. So it's how do we capture these male audiences? How do we make it super simple, straightforward, seamless, not overwhelming for them, as well as, you know, our other core kind of, you know, gender demographic, I suppose. But yeah, I mean, it's all things that are like in the midst of being thought about at the minute.
Yeah, I mean, it's an important, and we could do a whole new episode on customer experience in jewellery shopping online and the difference between demographics and the sexes. That'd be a fascinating one. That's come to the end of the questions we wanted to ask. So Molly, Rachel, really enjoyed having this conversation. It's great to have you on. Great to hear the success stories. And, you know, Molly, I hope you continue to enjoy the Owie Network as well. Lovely to see you on the honorees this year. And for those who've listened in, we hope you've enjoyed it. Thanks for listening. If you missed our previous Amazing Women in E-commerce episode, you can catch up there on the website. We've done interviews with Kukai and Kind Laundry, so different stories, but all celebrating amazing success amongst the women leaders in e-commerce. And don't forget, before you go, to give us that rating on Apple, Spotify, YouTube, or wherever else you may be listening. Thanks so much, everybody. Until next time. For more information on this topic, head over to replatform.fm for our audio podcasts. To discuss a project, or if you'd like to chat about any of the topics covered in this episode in more detail, please reach out to myself, James Gird, or my co-host, Paul Rogers, via LinkedIn and Twitter. Thanks again for listening, and keep your ears peeled for the next episode.